The primary election is almost here. Vote centers will be open May 7th from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Make your vote count. Visit vote.indy.gov for more information. This message was paid for by the Marion County Election Board.
This morning on the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy. It's the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy on 93.5 and 107.5, The Fan.
Now on the right wing, it's Siakam one-on-one with the defensively challenged Lillard. Siakam will recognize the situation and hurt Lillard, taking him to the goal with the layup. Down to 10 seconds to shoot. Beverly defends. Siakam comes up to screen. Halliburton uses it. Now he'll get it to Siakam. A pick and pop three. That was beautifully executed. Siakam to the corner. Shepherd sends it back up top. And now Halliburton will drive from the left edge. And he'll take it home across the lane left to right. Here comes McConnell. Right edge, Nesmith into the lane. Siakam turns and delivers one more time. Milwaukee takes a timeout. The Pacers have their largest lead of the night. Here comes Nembhard. The Pacers running. Nesmith to the goal, flips it off the right-hand glass. Negative. Rebound punched out to the perimeter. Halliburton for three, left sideline. A 23-4 run on the road.
Didn't go to the playoff last year, so that was my goal coming in this year. I'm blessed to be able to be in this organization like the Pacers. You know, they're giving me everything. The love is amazing, so I feel good, man. We're in the playoffs. I'm back where I belong, so I just want to continue to compete.
They always say, like, a series don't start until there's a road win, so we got that, so I guess it started.
He's a unique player. His experience shows, and he had a lot of big plays for us tonight.
Man, I was happy to get back to Gainbridge. I ain't been there since 2018, so let's get it.
Let's go. Let's go.
That's why I'm telling you, I just want to celebrate. Yeah, yeah.
Game on, series on. It is 1-1 as we return home 5:30 on Friday night. They have responded all year long. It is a different environment. It is a different atmosphere. The response was beyond alive and well last night. Good Wednesday morning to you. I'm Kevin Bowen, Andy Sweeney, and Mark Dykton. Thank you for the open. Thank you to the Pacers Radio Network for some of those clips. Pascal Siakam, absolutely incredible last night. And just the response, Andy. Counterpunch after counterpunch on the road. You could not be more impressed by how the Pacers thoroughly embarrassed on Sunday. And then what they did last night, frankly, I think is what probably you and I expected a lot during the series.
Yeah, good morning to you guys. You feeling better today? Boy, we felt crappy around here, did we not, after that debacle on Sunday night? You know, we had Carlisle on yesterday, and you could just tell, even though it had been a few days, KB, that our boy Rick Carlisle was seething after that game, after that embarrassment, quite frankly, on Sunday night. And, you know, we've talked about it, and you mentioned it there. This team has some faults. There is no doubt about it. They are not a finished product to where the front office and Rick Carlisle eventually want to get this team. But they do have a superpower, and that is bouncing back. They're almost like a quarterback that throws an interception, and it's all right. I'm going to go back out there. I'm going to sling it. It's like the corner that gets beat deep. It's all right. I'm going to go back out there, and I'm going to get, you know, I'm going to backpedal, and I'm going to get the number one wide receiver, and I'm going to follow him around the field on a Sunday afternoon. And to me, that's this team. Their superpower is they will forget and they will bounce back. And last night, we saw them bounce back. We saw them make, outside of Damian Lillard, in a little bit of Chris Middleton, we saw the average roster that the Bucks actually have, and the other pieces were good. Siakam was great. And if there was any, I don't know, up in the air thoughts on the trade around Pascal Siakam, good God, he has got the matchups that he likes in this series, and he has been fantastic, and the Pacers were fantastic last night. What a night.
Yeah, I mean, I look like certainly an absolute idiot labeling a trade of Siakam lukewarm, you know, was the term that I used back in January, and I honestly didn't give enough credit to these moments of what Siakam can do when chaos is around him. I tweeted out last night on several occasions, you watch him play and there's a David West vibe to it. And I don't know, maybe I'm going a little bit too far back, but you know, I always felt what made those Pacer teams with Paul George and company so lethal is they could throw the ball to West late shot clock, late game, and everything would calm down.
you knew full well he'd probably take his time. It wouldn't be a little bit methodical. It might not be some high-flying act, and he's dunking at the rim. But that dude knows his game, and he's going to go get you a bucket. And that is exactly what Siakam brings to the table. Like, it's one of those things. It'd be funny if we all had to wear, like, these blood pressure monitors and see what the blood pressure is like when other guys touch it versus what it's like when Siakam,
you know, they're doing
gets
that,
the ball.
They're doing that with parents for the Olympics. They're putting heart monitors on them just to,
really?
Just to pause you for a second. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say
that might be the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Oh, that's a great idea.
I thought you were saying with their own children. I was like, well, that probably makes sense as well.
We're not doing any of that.
It strikes me as something we would do in today's society. But there's just a calming feeling when you throw the ball to him, and he's poised, he's cool, he's calm, he's collected.
He's winning his matchup, too, every single time.
And Milwaukee really has, I guess maybe the guy in street clothes is the guy, but no one that can guard him whatsoever. And boy, just absolutely adult-like from Siakam. Just so many of, just give me the ball type plays, you know, like everything else is whatever. Again, chaos around you, and you know, Halliburton, you know, through two games, although I didn't think he was like terrible last night, but through two games, he's certainly not scoring anywhere near what you thought. But damn, that's just such a calming influence. And in the playoffs, on the road, you need it. Siakam, grown man, absolutely unbelievable from him in these first two games. And I think you also have got to give a major hat tip to Andrew Nembhard. You know, to chase Damian Lillard around for as much as he's doing, and to score 20 points, and to run a little bit of the offense.
Oh,
you know,
and to talk junk.
Sure. I mean,
he had that edge last night. He had that
he
dog
plays
in him.
With a little bit of an edge, certainly. I think the Pacers just kind of wore Milwaukee down. Like, Lillard was, you know, he's kind of sucking for some wind.
Pat Beverly was as well.
At different points. Like, I hate to kind of boil it down to this, but it just seemed like young dudes and old dudes and their ability to, you know, withstand 48 minutes. And the Pacers, I thought, were able to do that just extraordinarily well.
Yeah, I love you, KB, but damn.
That was Chuck Pagano when you were cramping all over the Siakam
trade. That was the day they were getting Siakam.
Again, to be clear, I wanted OG Anunoby. And
who also has been very good.
20-3 with the Knicks, I believe, is OG Anunoby's record.
Boy, is that the record with them? That's pretty good, is it not? Stephen Holder, ESPN, we're one day closer. You know, while all this is going on, I'm just all sorts of jacked up for the NFL draft, KB. And I don't. We both have draft nuggets, Mark, that we'll get to today. I'm just ready to go. I love the draft because I have no idea what's going to happen. Some potential news did come out via, I believe it was Daniel Jeremiah last night. We'll dive into that, but Stephen Holder will join us at 8 o'clock. Our Colts on the Clock segment coming up as well at 8:30. Jeremiah Johnson, JJ, going to join us coming up in the 9 o'clock hour as we continue to celebrate the win last night. But I tell you, I think now, and this is something, KB, that you have said, and you said it about game one, and I don't know if you feel the same after last night, but, you know, the Pacers pull away. It's 1-1. If you want to look at it this way, they had to go get one in the first two. We always talk about that. You're the road team. Go get one. So, to some extent, even though Sunday night was such a bad experience, such a bad opening playoff experience for the Pacers, they get the win last night, and you wonder how much of the pressure now goes to what you have said, and that is, what about that injury with Giannis? Yeah. You know, before the game, now I'm not sure what he said after the game, but before the game yesterday, Doc Rivers said it's been four straight days now where Giannis has been on the floor doing something, right? Not practicing, not full contact, but has been on the floor kind of getting back. And you wonder exactly where he is and how much, if at all, and they may not, they're going to push him because I thought you saw the good of the extra players in game one for the Bucks, and then you saw that second unit, and really not even the second unit, just everyone besides, you know, Siakam was great, and Halliburton was at least good, but the confidence where the other group played with, you know, you mentioned Nembhard, Nesmith, a nice first half from Obi Toppin. They got contributions, a better second half from TJ McConnell. Like, you wonder now, where does the pressure, you know, you look at the first two games, where does the pressure go with Giannis? It's got to be there, and I'm interested in how they use him, what they do with him now. As, and by the way, just to say, I know there's people that don't like it on Friday at 5:30, but that's going to be a madhouse atmosphere.
We're going to need
Cambridge.
We're going to need one of those mayor letters.
You're damn right. You get off work.
You know how
at
those
2:00.
Work? You know we haven't had those in a while.
It's been
a while.
I
feel like in our market, yeah. in our state. But yeah, Hogsett, Holcomb. We need the letters. You get out of work by what? Can we say 3:30? We go 4.
I'd like to say 2 or 2:30. I'm being a little bit greedy here. I mean, come on, afternoon. What's
got some
happening?
Big blue collar jobs. Well, in this beautiful state.
You take your lunch break from 12 to 1, you get back, you knock out some emails from 1 to 2:30, and then you get out of there.
I think the lunch break goes out the window. I think we're back in that end.
Yeah.
Eat at the desk on this Friday afternoon because Gainbridge should be absolutely rocking on Friday. Rick Carlisle used the phrase with us, stay tuned on the rotation.
Yeah.
Stay tuned led to substantial rotational changes. And you can look at the obvious, Andy. They went from 11 to 8 in the rotation. But also, there was a moment early in that game where he put Siakam on the bench, you know, much earlier than I feel like normal. And then after like a couple minutes, he put Siakam right back in the game.
Right.
So I guess to describe it, there were like choppier moments on the bench. You know, instead of the, hey, you're going to sit for 5 straight minutes, it was no. When we feel the urge of, you know, things are changing, and obviously I think you're trying to counter a little bit of when Milwaukee is subbing as well. You know, he put Siakam back in during the first quarter. So I thought those were just some really nice tweaks that you obviously saw. That to me really stood out as well. But you know, you brought up some of the others, you know, Nembhard, again, Nesmith, that might not show up in the box score as much. You know, Turner had some timely shots in the second half. Those guys doing it away from home stands out to me as well.
I would agree.
Because I think when you get in the playoffs, and your others sounds like such a poor description from me, so I apologize for that, but whatever. Your non-marquee guys, it's one thing to hit shots at home. It's another thing to hit shots away from home. So theoretically, I'm watching Lopez, you know, bang in a million of them in the first 5 minutes of the game, thinking there's no way he's going to continue to do this.
I mean,
away from home, right?
I mean, those shots that he's
making. So that's where I think I exit game two, a totally different feeling than game one of like, all right, theoretically, you're going to come home, and now Obi Toppin's going to look a little bit more from a consistent standpoint. And again, maybe Nesmith hits a few of those open threes. You know, at one point, Nesmith was leading the league in 3-point shooting this year. So, you know, does that happen? And, you know, A.J. Green and Pat Connaughton and Malik Beasley, I mean, those guys doing it away from home, I think remains to be seen. Obviously, the outlier in all of this is Giannis. When does he come back? How effective is he? What is the percentage of him when he comes back? Because, Andy, no, obviously, Giannis impacts everything, but he probably directly impacts Siakam in that I would assume he would guard Siakam. And naturally, that's just more length. Even if you don't want to act like Giannis is what? Some, you know, incredible lockdown defender, et cetera, et cetera. You know, right now, Siakam is getting matchups where he's got like 6'5", 6'6", dudes on him.
Yeah, Siakam's getting whatever he wants. You can't put a big on him.
He's just shooting over people.
Yeah, but you can't put a 6'5 guy on him either. You can't do either one of those.
And if it's Lopez, he's just driving by him.
Right.
So, and then obviously on the other end of the floor, Siakam you would think would be part of the brigade that would be needed to try and defend Giannis. So, you know, pre-Giannis, post-Giannis, that's kind of how I've labeled the series. But again, just the response last night and the ability to counterpunch and what Siakam gave you, it really is one of the greatest playoff games, certainly in Pacers playoff history. And the stats on Siakam last night, I mean, it's crazy. It's listed with Wilt. It's listed with Shaq. Just absolutely absurd from him.
Yeah, the two stats that are coming out, Siakam is the first NBA player to open the playoffs with back-to-back 35-point and 10-rebound games since Wilt did it back in 1967. And so that is very much out there. And then I had another one as well. There was like 3 or 4 of these floating around of how good, you know, he really was through the first two games. And listen, I wasn't against the trade. I wasn't also pom-pom leader with the cheer, you know, with the cheerleaders dancing around. And, got Siakam. But boy, he has been so good, and he is forcing the hand that if Giannis can go out there and give them something, they're to the point that they're going to have to think about it. So I want to get to at 7:30. Some Dame Lillard numbers, because, you know, we looked at plus 21. That's what the Bucks were in game one when Lillard went to the bench. It was very difficult to track that yesterday because Lillard didn't go to the bench.
Well, what
they
you
tried
did
one time to put him on the bench.
I was going to say what you did, and Andy, try to say this yesterday. You need to dictate when he comes back in the game.
And they did that.
Like, you can't let him have the heat pad on the legs for 5 minutes, and Doc Rivers finally is like, all right, Dame, are you ready? And what you did yesterday was you forced Doc Rivers to look at Damian Lillard after about 90 seconds and say,
let's go.
Dude, you got to go back in there. And again, you watch the end of the first half. You watch the end of the third quarter. As Lillard has started to play kind of 10 straight minutes, I mean, it's hands on the hips. And that you just outlasted them, frankly, with, you know, again, Nembhard's energy level, defending him as much as you did, all of that stuff. Am I allowed to bitch and moan about Bally Sports here?
Well, that was going to be my next transition. So what do we do with this? Because the NBA TV feed with your boy Gus Johnson was blacked out in the area, so you had to go to Bally's.
So we have two issues right here.
Correct.
So one issue is the blackout.
Correct.
If you've paid for NBA League Pass, you still could not watch last night's game, correct?
Yes.
Right, and I would imagine NBA TV, and I don't know, Mark, you have YouTube TV as well, but you know, I pay for it, and then I forget about it, so these companies love me because I pay for it, then I forget about it, and they just keep taking money out of my credit card. We pay a couple dollars extra for NBA TV. It's part of a sports package that is maybe $5, $6, $7 to the bill, which is, of course, nothing. You pay it, you move on if you're a sports fan, but if you dialed up NBA TV, you got the blackout last night.
So that's our first issue. And then our second issue is for those reliant on the Bally app, which for cord cutters out there, that's everybody.
Well, I've watched every game this year.
I am linear Bally. I get it through UVerse. So I just, you know, channel 1749, boom. But the Bally app sounded like it looked like the Milwaukee bench last night.
Well, here's our problem.
So we have two different issues there.
Okay,
I want to make that clear. Yeah. We have the NBA blackout, if you have NBA TV, and then you
ridiculous
have the Bally app, which I had to bring up the tweet last night. And again, when you say the words with all due respect, you're allowed to say anything right?
You can crap on anybody as long as you say
Ricky
that on
Bobby
the front end.
Said it was true, so you can do that.
With all due respect, I tweeted very early in the season, Bally Sports can kiss my ass.
It was the first game. It wasn't early in the season. It was the very first game. I remember looking at you in the eyes when you said that at 7:03 that morning.
So I brought it back out last night. It was needed.
Did you retweet it? I didn't see that.
Rosie was coughing up a storm. Maddie's like, will you please go up there? I'm like, sure. So I dial up the Bally app to kind of get me through those few minutes, and that thing is as effective as the weather Apple app.
What were you supposed to do with the coughs? I mean, Robitussin, the back.
I'm here.
What exactly are you supposed to do?
I'm cold. All right. We'll turn the fan off. We'll turn the fan on, et cetera, et cetera. Well, to pay $20 for an app and have the user experience that Bally offers is just horrific. And I've said that all year long. There are numerous times where, again, I watch on the app sometimes if I'm in the room with the kids and you know they're trying to fall asleep and whatever, I'm rocking Max, and that thing will shut off on me constantly. Constantly. And I watch Peacock live sports on Peacock. Never have that issue there.
I know.
Other apps, ESPN Plus.
ESPN, I know.
I watch live sports there.
I never have that
issue. It's freaking Bally.
Here's my biggest problem. Let me go in order here before we get to a morning checkdown, because we have a lot of time this morning to talk about this stuff. I know this is a conversation piece. The NBA, we wondered. We talked.
I know.
We didn't talk enough.
Which we
about
won't have this issue for game three and four, by the way.
We didn't talk enough. You're
maybe
right.
Maybe game five and six.
Maybe five and six. We didn't talk about this enough, but we didn't know at the time if NBA TV was going to be a local blackout. We wondered that. And then, you know,
I don't get that. If you're paying for the league pass and it's a playoff game,
it's a rights thing. I have no idea. The thing about this is that the customer, and this has been my thing even before I got here to Indianapolis, KB, the customer always gets screwed here. They either can't find it, it's blacked out, or they have to subscribe to so many things, right? And so the customer, whether it's blackout or you're paying money monthly, the customer's always being screwed when it comes to TV rights things. And part of it is we ask for it. We cut the cord. or a lot of people did, and they said, okay, if we're going to go a la carte, then you're going to have to pay for everything a la carte. The problem I have with this conversation, it's twofold. Number one, I didn't have this issue, so I can't come in here fire and brimstone because I have watched every single Pacers game that I watched this season, which has been basically all of them. I've watched them all on Bally's, and on top of it, I didn't have an issue at all with my app last night. I was on the TV. It was on the Apple TV. I didn't have that issue. And then the second part of this is, and this is the only part where I stray from the fan, okay? And that is, if you were getting ready to watch the Pacers last night and you don't have Bally's, whether you're paying monthly on the app, you cut the cord like me, or you have it on a UVerse or DirecTV or whatever it may be, like you, then you haven't watched the Pacers all year. So some of those people I wasn't really feeling bad for.
That's where you have two different sections of people.
Correct.
You've got people that, you know, have League Pass, or the people that do watch on the app and the
had
app,
the issue with the app.
And the app is just up and down. It's totally inconsistent. And if I'm paying, I mean, you know this, Andy, $20 a month for an app?
Oh, it's
that
it's a
is
lot.
A crazy
for a single,
price
for a single channel.
Yeah. For that's it. You're not watching anything else on that channel in all likelihood.
They have the WPT, which is the poker tour. If
exactly.
you want to watch that,
you're not watching anything else.
Chris Moneymaker, remember him?
I was a Phil Ivey guy, or maybe Phil Hellmuth.
Oh man, I met him, by the way.
I think it was the other guy.
I interviewed Hellmuth.
You're
right.
I don't want to bitch and moan too long about it, but still, I understand people's massive frustration, and for the first playoff win in 6 years for your franchise, and you know all of that, to have that type of user experience is pathetic.
Well, not only that, just the first playoff game in a while. Like, obviously, game one was on national TV. Game two, we didn't know heading into it. Like, is it on NBA? It says it's on NBA TV, but will it be on locally? We didn't know. So it's kind of like that unknown. I just was thinking about it as I watched my app just circle, do the buffering circle for 20 minutes. I was like, can you imagine if this was like an NFL playoff game?
You do have
it
to.
It would never happen.
You do have to delete the app and sometimes reinstall
an NFL
the app.
Something
game.
Went wrong. Try again.
An NFL playoff game, you've aired it on Peacock, but the Peacock app works beautifully.
Yeah, Amazon Thursday night never has a problem.
So
one time.
That's my issue. It's other leagues put their playoff games on streaming services.
Sure.
Welcome to 2024. If you're going to do it, make sure the damn thing works.
It's got
to
be right. Yeah, between that and then the blackout, I understand the frustration. I'm with fans about 90% on this one. Let's take a break. We'll get to a morning check down here. We'll get you updated all of last night's happenings. A lot of things happening in baseball and, of course, the three games in the NBA. A couple road teams, including the Pacers, got the win last night. Plus, what did Rick Carlisle and Tyrese Haliburton say after the big win? We'll talk about that next. Hanging out with you until 10 o'clock. It's a Wednesday. It's the Wake Up Call.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
93.5 107.5 The Fan.
For many of you, it will be all eyes on Gainbridge Fieldhouse, and again, that first home game in 6 years. For our next guest and myself, it'll be a lot of Colts draft, as we'll be over at West 56th Street, rounds 2 and 3. Stephen Holder from ESPN joins us now. Stephen, saw the video last night. Quinion Mitchell at pick 15 was how your ESPN mock draft went. Did you have a hard decision there? Were there anybody else on the board that you thought about before you made that selection?
No, I mean, I think the other alternatives, were they available, you know, would have been, you know, certainly one of the top receivers. If they're on the board, then that's a different calculation. But those guys were long gone. Turner, a defensive end, was gone. And who am I forgetting? Oh, Brock Bowers was gone as well. So I think that made it a much easier calculation. You know, the only question is, you know, do you like, you know, the next receiver on the board, whoever that is for you, if it's Thomas, do you prefer a different cornerback, which, you know, is a conversation that individual teams can have, you know, depending on what you like. Tyrion Arnold from Alabama, is out there as well. So he would, you know, not be a terrible option. So, but other than that, I think those were probably the decisions or the calculations that I had to make. But I do think, yes, just given what was available, I think in terms of the people who are smarter than me, there does seem to be a lot of consensus about, well, the type of player that he is. And he does seem like a guy who would fit what the Colts want to do. So it seemed to make sense to me.
Go back to Chris Ballard's answer on Friday in regards to why they haven't made a DB addition so far in free agency. And when I listen to it, Steven, I don't walk away from it thinking there's some Eric Fisher waiting in the weeds to be signed post-draft. And I guess that's kind of the question I have of, like, it seems like Ballard's answer wasn't more of a, if nothing happens in the draft, we'll do something of note post-draft. It was more of like a, and again, that's what they did with Eric Fisher a few years ago at offensive tackle. It almost seems like, no, I'm very bullish on the young guys, and I don't think they played as bad as everyone else thought. Was that the vibe you kind of got from that Ballard answer?
Yeah, it's actually how I've felt for a while now, just based on the conversations we've had with him. And I thought he just kind of reaffirmed it for me. And, I think that people can disagree. Clearly, there are reasons why we would question that position. Now, at the same time, I don't think he's, like, crazy. Okay, let me just explain. Like, I get where he's coming from. Last year, when you saw what you saw last year, like, that was not a real depiction of what they have. That is true, right? They had massive injuries. Juju Brents never really ever got on track. I mean, he played, then he got hurt. He got hurt, then he played. And, you know, so, like, that was not a true depiction of what they were. And he was far from the only injury. So what they have at full strength is actually, you know, a playable unit of guys, right? Now, the question is, and the problem is, I think for you and I and others might be, okay, that is true, but you still don't really know what the ceiling of those guys really is, or even the floor, I guess, because we haven't seen enough. Certainly haven't seen them together, right? And then depth. Depth is always an issue, and last year showed, you know, that you have to tap into that depth. Almost certainly are going to have to tap into that depth. So I'm with you. I agree. I think that he does feel strongly about that unit. And I also don't think he's crazy, but that doesn't mean that you should do nothing. The last thing I would say is that he didn't say this and he hasn't hinted at this, but I do think it seems as if he knows they have an opportunity to address that position in the draft if they so choose. And maybe that has maybe lessened the sense of urgency, I guess.
Stephen Holder joins us one day from the NFL draft. And Stephen, at some point, boy, I'd love to get some truth serum. How do you like covering this event, given that we have no idea what's going to happen? Usually in a game, we're like, oh, yeah, here's the matchup. We have no idea what's going to happen tomorrow night. That's one thing that is so exciting about the NFL draft. Stephen joins us on the Payless Liquors Hotline. I want to throw a scenario we just talked about. So before you came on, we played about 20 seconds of Daniel Jeremiah, the NFL Network, saying, you know, he's hearing that the Colts love Quinyon Mitchell. Obviously, we know that. We're talking about him. And they may even want to move up a few spots if he's there to get him. The scenario that interests me the most is if Mitchell were to go at like 11 or 12, you know how sometimes that can start a run at a position? So if Mitchell happened to go, then someone's like, wait a minute, I need a corner, and they go take Arnold. So if Bowers was off the board and Arnold was off the board and Mitchell was off the board, and Ballard and the Colts are sitting there at 15, what do they do? That's what would interest me the most going into Thursday night. What do you think about that scenario? And is there a scenario on Thursday that would really interest you if the Colts were put in a pickle or if a guy dropped to them, quite frankly, and they got to take somebody they didn't think would be there at 15?
Well, the first scenario you painted, which is, you know, under that scenario, you're talking about two additional defensive players going within the first 14 picks, whereas right now we're projecting overwhelmingly offensive players. So what I'm saying is that means some offensive player or two is dropping under that scenario. So I think a couple things would happen. the Colts, I think at that point, I think Ballard's looking at a trade back, because if you're not going to get the top defensive back, or even maybe the second best in that scenario, I think you trade out, because, or at least you try to trade out, because the wide receivers go pretty deep. You can come back in the late first and still get a good wide receiver, even early in the second. But, you know, the drop-off at defensive back might be a little steeper. So that would be just my initial thought on that. In terms of, I think your other question was, or the other scenario you painted was if somebody falls to them, I guess. Well, yeah, I mean, they've done that before. They've had that situation before. You know, for example, I think we talked about this last week, right? With the Malik Hooker situation in 2017, that was not a position at safety that they had really considered very heavily. And it truly, truly was just the best player available scenario. So he's done it before. That was actually Chris Ballard's first draft with the Colts. And I actually think that was the right pick. They did the right thing. In the long term, injuries definitely interrupted Hooker's career, but he was off to an amazing start in the first half of his rookie season. It was clearly the right pick. But again, not a premium position, talking about safety, and not a position that we at the time projected as being a really pressing need. But sometimes it's just staring you in the face and you got to do what you got to do. And they did the right thing there. So I think they'll be ready for all the scenarios, and they'll just be being prepared for it, really. Because 15, it puts you in such a different position than last year. And number four, there are only so many scenarios that can happen in front
right.
of you. Here,
anything
literally,
can happen.
Anything yeah. can happen. Yeah.
Again, he is Stephen Holder of ESPN in that mock draft they did with their respective beat writers. Quinion Mitchell at 15 overall, the corner out of Toledo. Stephen joins us now. Stephen, you were all over the Danielle Hunter interest story from earlier in the offseason. The Colts having, probably it's fair to say, legit interest in making a substantial offer for Danielle Hunter. He ends up signing with the hometown team in the Houston Texans. Did that scream to you, we think it's a position of need, or we just love the player? Because I've probably been banging the drum for edge rusher more than most, and fully acknowledge, you know, this draft, you know, what does that offer at 15 remains up in the air. But I'm just curious how much right. you think that is actual need or love of the player more than anything.
No, it's a great question. I've gone back and forth on that, and I guess it depends when you ask me, but I see both sides of it. I think it's a little of both. Number one, we cannot ignore that happened. They made a substantive offer to Danielle Hunter in, I believe, in excess of $50 million for 2 years. Okay, like, the Colts don't do that, okay? They do not do that. So that's remarkable in and of itself, right? And then you've got the reality that in a couple of years, or, I mean, really a year from now, there is some uncertainty at that edge rush spot. What is the future of Kwity Paye? As we sit here today, I mean, we don't know. We really don't. And certainly when they have to make that fifth-year option decision, and that'll be coming pretty soon, in fact, that the decision having to be made, I think, next month. So that'll give us more clarity. But as we sit here right now, I mean, we don't know what that unit looks like beyond next year. I wouldn't say it's a foremost need. And when I say that, I mean, like, right now. Like, they certainly can go out and have a productive season with the lineup that they have at edge rush right now, theoretically. But I think for the long term, and when you factor in what the trenches mean to Chris Ballard, which for him is everything, and he has proven that, right, with his picks. He has made numerous pass rush picks, numerous. I do think that you have to consider it heavily when you look at the picture. I don't know that that a great option is going to be there, which I think has made the conversation a little secondary. But just theoretically, just talking about that position generally, I think it's appropriate. And I think that there is something to be discussed there in terms of the Colts. If not in the first round, certainly in the second and third round, that's on the table for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you look at defensive line, and Stephen Holder from ESPN.com with us. We're talking about the draft, the first round coming up tomorrow night. I don't know. I mean, if Dallas Turner is off the board, let's just assume Dallas Turner is off the board and he goes
right
before 15. In theory, they could have the second defensive lineman could go to the Colts and Ballard. And I'm with you. We've talked about corner and wide receiver so much leading up to Thursday night. We haven't mentioned defensive line, and there's probably two or three guys that are considered elite-level projects. If they called a defensive lineman, an edge guy specifically, a defensive lineman on Thursday night, scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most, how surprised would you be?
No, not surprised at all. I think that it wouldn't be my first prediction, but I wouldn't be surprised at all. And in fact, I wouldn't even flinch. I think this is one of those things where it boils down to the evaluation. Okay, and look, you have to at some point trust your instincts and trust your scouts. And if there's a player that you deem as just a potentially elite player, and he's there for you, but you have this other need, and you're like, well, we really do need this corner, I still think you have to stick with the evaluation. And you gotta think about this in the long term and not in the short term. I know, right? We're all, it's a microwave society. I get all that. But in the NFL draft, you cannot think that way. And if you have a defensive lineman, I don't know which one, right? But this is up to them. But they're the experts. And the Colts are a very effective team when it comes to the NFL draft. We can say what we want about the results and, you know, over the several years now. That's fine. But one thing we cannot say is that they don't draft well. They do draft well. They're actually one of the better draft teams in the NFL. So I give them the benefit of the doubt. If they are saying unequivocally, we want the pass rusher, he's going to be better in the long term, okay, I'm with him. And I give him the benefit of the doubt until proven wrong. So, and besides, it's like you just said, I don't think it's sort of a reach or it's sort of a dumbfounding move or anything.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's perfectly reasonable.
Again, Stephen Holder, ESPN, with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Stephen, I do want to shift gears as we close things out to Jim Irsay. And you had that story earlier this week on Irsay not going to be in attendance at the draft. I would assume that's the first time in his history, really, as owner, he won't be present in the war room. To me, it's just another reminder of like how rough physical shape he's been in for the last handful of months. I mean, you know, if you want to think about it, Steven, that's one of the biggest games in Lucas Oil history that he did not attend for that Houston game to close out the year. And you, I mean, I don't know, maybe you and I have a better perspective of this. He loves the draft. I mean, he is a draft nerd, really. I mean, he can't get enough of it. And he does his little, you know, State of the Union with us every Saturday of the draft. I guess I just read your story and you see the details within the story. And it's another reminder of him not being present. Just goes to show you, sadly, how rough of shape he's in medically.
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, I think, first of all, Jim Irsay in the draft, I mean, he loves the draft for the same reason that a lot of fans love the draft, because he's the biggest fan of all, right? And the reason that I'm talking about specifically is that he loves it for the hope and the optimism. And, you know, that's right up his alley, right? When Jim Irsay talks about the Colts, what does he talk about? He talks about their fortunes in terms of like, we got to go get that Lombardi and, you know, this is our year. And so the draft is perfect for that kind of person, right? It's the time of year when everything's great and every player is going to go to the Hall of Fame. So this is right up Jim Irsay's alley. And I have no doubt this is definitely painful for him to not be there. He will be connected virtually. That is something he made clear. He'll be able to have regular contact with Chris Ballard, Shane Steichen, and others. So he'll have a presence one way or the other. He said he even expects to be able to talk to the players when they're drafted, you know, in those welcome phone calls. That's also something he loves to participate in. But excuse me. But to your point, there's no question. It does take a lot to keep Jim Irsay away. And as he told me, he said, look, I'm really just trying to follow doctor's orders here and kind of recuperate. Now, in terms of his just to quickly put a bow on this, in terms of how we got here, there's still some murkiness about that, right? I mean, we know about, you know, the reporting. I reported it myself as well about the alleged overdose or suspected overdose. He talked to Mike Chappell as well. He denies that it was an overdose. Look, it is what it is. He said to me, he said, look, I have a history. It is what it is. And that forces people, it causes people's minds to wander. All right. I don't know. I got to let him have his say, but you know, we read the details that we read, and I guess that's all we can do is just take it from there. But anyhow, he also had a major surgery recently on his lower back, and is recuperating from that. You know, he's had many, many injuries over the years, so he's got a lot going on, but he's on the road back and hopes to be back in Canton on August 3rd when Dwight Freeney goes in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, there's definitely some he said, she said stuff in regards to the reported overdose. I wanted to clarify, and again, he's thrown out this number. I mean, I think it's 27 surgeries he's mentioned in the last 7 to 8 years. I mean, wow. That number is
just unbelievable.
It's jarring, frankly, when you look at it and consider someone his age that has gone through what he's gone through. So you mentioned serious lower back injury. Was there a leg injury involved, or excuse me, a leg surgery involved, or is this the same thing?
I believe that's a separate matter, but it is all very confusing. Okay, I admit it's very confusing. If I understand his conversation with Mike Chappell, he is suggesting, if I'm reading it correctly, that relates to the December incident. I thought this back lower back surgery was more recent, like in the calendar year of 2024. But again, it's all very confusing. I'm sorry.
Should we know the truth here? Just because there is public money and a public trust, or should we know exactly what's going on with Jim Irsay, or you know, or can he be private in these matters? I guess
that's a great question, and I think it's a fair question, an important question. My position on it is this: I think we need to know, and I told him this when I reached out to him. I said, "Look, people are asking a lot of questions about you." I didn't say that he owed them an answer necessarily, but I said, you know, look, people want to know, and the reason they want to know is because they love the Colts, and obviously he personally is important to people in this city, right? So he agreed to that. He agreed with that, and that's why I thought it was important to hear from him, because look, if you want to say, look, you're in charge, well, I mean, look, people want to hear from you, right? And so he made that clear that, look, he's still in charge. He repeated that as well in his conversation with Mike Chappell even more strongly. So I think it's important to him for people to understand that he is still in control of the team, because that has clearly been questioned. I get that question all the time. Like, when are his daughters going to take over? And in his mind, I don't know where he stands physically and what the long term is here. I have no idea. But I will tell you, in his mind, he ain't trying to hear that, okay? This is his team, and he's in charge for at least right now. So in his mind, that's not changing in the near future, as far as I can tell from my conversations with him. So that's why, to your question, do we need to know everything? Maybe, maybe not. But I think people are going to want to know who's in charge and what is his situation given his standing in the community. Those are fair questions.
About 36 hours from now, 2024 NFL draft underway. Gosh, I don't even want to know what time. 10:30, 11. I don't even want to guess what time the Colts are going to pick. 10 minutes. That's something I will never understand. 10 minutes per pick here in round one. I remember. Did it used to be 15? Or am I imagining things?
It used to be. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think when they had the first round on Saturday, didn't they used to do it that way? I think. I don't know.
I forgot.
Maybe even more recent.
Saturday.
Yeah.
That wasn't that long.
Remember those? Oh, man. It was all day. I've covered the NFL a long time. So it was all day Saturday, all day Sunday. It was brutal, but actually probably not as bad as Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, which is just, it feels like. It's consuming my life for a week.
Yeah, I like a lot of you. I will hate all of you by about Saturday afternoon.
Exactly.
Don't take it personally, Steven. As always, thank you, man.
All right, guys. I'll see you.
It'll be...
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Absolutely rocking. Friday, 5:30, gold out inside of Gainbridge Fieldhouse. I'm picturing Jeremiah Johnson, maybe like the finger in the opposite ear to, you know, I can't really hear what's going on right now in my ear, giving us sideline reports. It will be absolutely electric. Again, I have pleaded with Mayor Hogsett and Governor Holcomb. We need the get out of work early card to be sent out to everyone. 3:30, is that what we decided on? 3:30, does that give everybody enough time?
That's what you said. I was more of a 2 o'clock.
Yeah,
but,
okay.
You know, 3:30 is fine. It gets you a couple hours to get lubed up before the game. I got no problem with that.
Take care of what you need to. Now, I'm also worried about the time and the sleep of our next guest. He is Jeremiah Johnson. He is on Bally Sports. JJ, what time did you go to bed?
I don't know. I think 2:30. I'm good. If you can't wake up on a day like this, you can't wake up any day, right?
Preach. Adrenaline rush, right?
Exactly. We'll sleep at another time down the road.
Amen to that. Series tied at 1-1. JJ, I don't know if this is just the nostalgia in me that stood out more than anything, but I watched Pascal Siakam last night, and again, the historical data is just... Honestly, it's eye-popping. Wilt Chamberlain this, Shaq this, et cetera, et cetera. But I just felt like I got David West vibes. When you needed some grown man plays, when you needed to stop the bleeding, when you needed a bucket, you just threw the ball to him, and it might look old school. It might be a little methodical. It's not probably going to lead off any Sports Center highlight, but it's a bucket getter, and that's exactly what Siakam did. He just gives me David West. I feel calmer when he is holding the basketball vibes.
Yeah, so much toughness, and the way he scores, I mean, it's not just throwing the ball in the post. Sometimes he'll slash, he'll cut, he'll get a rebound, but as you mentioned, anytime you need a basket, and when he has some 10 to 15-foot jumper, I just marked down two on my score sheet. I'm shocked when he misses, and I go back to a stretch during the regular season. I would look at the box score, I'd be talking to Eddie Gill, and it was like seven straight games where he was 11 for 15. He was 10 for 14. And as you mentioned, it may not be the ones that make the highlights, the plays that aren't as, you know, impressive or crazy exciting, but they're effective. And the other thing that I think I've noticed him gradually increases vocal role with the team is talking during huddles. I mean, when there were – the moments where the Bucks made little runs last night and Rick Carlisle called a timeout, his voice was the loudest. And he said after the game that that's something that he usually tried to just let his play do the talking, but he was almost asked or he felt it was needed that he needed to talk a little bit more. And that's not easy to do with someone that's not at training camp and not there at the start of the season and jumps in January. But he saw a need, especially after game one when you had so many guys that kind of had that deer in headlights look. He had the message not just during the games, but in practice and in the downtime in those 48 hours to get everybody focused. MVP of the playoffs so far, it's probably Damian Lillard and Pascal Siakam with what those two players have done for their respective teams.
Jeremiah Johnson joining us here on this Wednesday at Pacers. JJ, you want to follow him there on Twitter X, and he joins us on the Payless Liquors hotline. JJ, I want to go back, and I'm not asking you to put you in a bad spot, but you know, I always find it interesting. We have Carlisle on Tuesdays, and I mean, listen, there have been Tuesdays where he's been in good moods and bad moods, and And Sunday night happened, JJ, and he was in such a bad mood on Sunday. And then, you know, we had him on Tuesday, and boy, his answers were short, and you could tell he was still so unhappy with how his team played.
He dunked on me a few times. I mean, I got posterized by him.
I mean, Jeremiah, he was just unhappy with how they played on Sunday, and he was still that way on Tuesday. You get to follow the team there up close in Milwaukee. How frustrated and angry was he and the team with how bad they played on Sunday? And boy, I thought they corrected a lot of those things last night.
They did. Let's just say it wasn't a normal April practice on Monday at the Fiserv Forum. They went a long time. They went over a lot of things. This time of the year, you don't do a lot of practicing, and they had a lot of things they needed to go over. I was surprised after game one that his opening statement went with the, you know, embarrassing, because that's the kind of comment that gets the headlines. And much like after the Pacers clinched that game against the Hawks, he wanted to move the focus forward. He uses those media availabilities, I think, to send some messages to his team. And so he was not going to just let this team ease into this series after what happened on Sunday. He wanted them to get back on track. And even the media availability before the game on Tuesday, there's a room filled with probably 12 to 15 people. Tony East asked the first question. I think it was a one-sentence answer. There was a second question asked from someone from Milwaukee, maybe two sentences. Everyone looked around, and that was all. Then it was time for my interview. Now, I felt like it was a pretty normal pregame interview that we had in our one-on-one conversation. But again, he takes pride in the way this team plays. And there have been other times this season when they weren't defending at all. And you could just tell he wasn't happy with how they're playing. And that affects him. And so, I didn't have any conversation. I kind of probably steered clear a little bit. But I know the team was down. And the one thing was, sometimes these series, you play Sunday, and I think there's a series tonight that's, you know, Sunday, Wednesday. I'm really glad they had Sunday, Tuesday, and they had the chance to get back on the court, because they were just anxious to play. He used that word to me again two or three times last night. We're anxious to get out there. We want to go play. That was not sitting well, what happened on Sunday. Now the goal is to maybe have that same mood and mindset before game three. You can't just rest on your laurels.
Jeremiah Johnson with us. Pure adrenaline here on this Wednesday morning from JJ. On the Payless Liquors hotline. I was curious who you'd get post-game, JJ. And, you know, obviously, you know, Siakam's night speaks for itself. If I was going to be selfish, and I totally understand Turner, I really enjoy his candor. Certainly, there's an element of, you know, he's been to the franchise the longest, you know, the playoff history, et cetera, et cetera. That makes sense. I thought Andrew Nembhard deserved a bit of a spotlight post-game as well. It just, you know, to chase Damian Lillard around for as many minutes as he's doing, and then to score 20, like, Nembhard's not a 20-point guy night in, night out. But to go 8 of 11 from the floor, I don't think he turned the ball over, if I'm not mistaken, either. And there were some times where you asked him to handle it and let Tyrese, you know, do some stuff off the ball. I just thought Nembhard deserves a mention. And, you know, in the postgame chaos of all the Siakam praise, beyond understandably, I thought a major hat tip to Nembhard.
He does. Just a little bit inside baseball here. In the playoffs, there's a long list of people that get the walk-off interview. So Pascal Siakam went to NBA TV, and some of it's just distributed. You're going to have him, you're going to have him. I did say Pascal or Miles as part of my request. But if you did have a chance to stay tuned to the postgame show, here's a little secret. Eddie Gill probably likes talking about Andrew Nembhard more than any other player on the team. I don't know if he sees some of his game in Andrew, or he just respects the way he plays. But we probably spent two segments talking about him, because we praised him, then Rick Carlisle praised him, and then we said, you know, let's go back to what he did. And Eddie had some really good comments, because you could say Damian Lillard scores 34 points. Wow, that wasn't much defense. But the way he made him work for that, and just all over, and some of those shots, you do have to tip your cap. I mean, at some point, some of the shots that Lillard made were not defensive breakdowns. Now, there were some other plays you probably would want to do a little bit better, but I just love the competition. I asked him a question before the playoffs even started about the matchup with Damian Lillard, and there was no smile. There was no, he's a great player. He's like, I'm a competitor. I like that matchup. I want to go after him. And we've seen that through two games. I mean, he's not going to back down. The only thing you want to be careful of is that no fouling, right? Because he gets so close to him, and sometimes Damian Lillard is a vet, and if he sees a hand on him, he'll throw a shot up and try to draw a foul. But the 20 points, it kind of was almost lost on me because I was focused so much on what he did to make life difficult for Lillard, and it's like, wow, he had 20 last night. I mean, I didn't even really fathom that till looking at the box score in the postgame show. So he moved into that starting lineup. There have been some questions about fit at the two guard, I think, during the last couple of months, but boy, was he awesome last night.
You got Pull in Zionsville?
Do I have Pull? Like,
Pull. Clout? You know, clout, yeah. I think you should. I'm just asking actually, if you feel that.
I'm actually kind of low on the clout meter around here, but what do you need?
We need John Stair. Now, he's the former WTHR guy, right? The mayor?
That is correct. I actually see him. I just picked up some coffee at a place I like to go, our place, and he's often sitting in there. So
nice.
Didn't
okay.
see him today, but yeah, he's usually in there.
We need him to write the letters. Write the letters, you know, to the companies in Zionsville. We need all of our mayors, all of our elected officials, band together. I know it's a big ask in today's country. Band together, and we need everybody off work. Andy Sweeney says 2 o'clock on Friday. I'll be a little bit more later in the day. You know, we still need to run an efficient 317 here. Let's go with 3:30 to get everybody inside of Gainbridge Fieldhouse properly pre-gamed, if necessary, for that 5:30 tip. Can we make that happen?
I'm going to say 2 o'clock. Actually, I'm going to say lunch.
There we go.
Everybody goes
to
lunch.
Wow, you're going half day.
Come back. Yeah. And the other area that I'm concerned about, I think schools need to let out early. What do you think? I mean, they have e-days all the time, and actually – my middle schooler has an E-day for some reason tomorrow. I think we need to switch that up with Friday. So some of the kids that are able to go or at least get plans for the watch parties. My oldest is going to go to the game, and I'm a little worried about school getting out at 4 o'clock and trying to get downtown. So this is a good platform for us to push for all educators. It's an experience, right?
Yes, I mean,
exactly.
This is better than that 2 hours you would spend in school. And as I just took Preston to school, he said, "You know what, Dad? I can't even believe it." I said, "What?" He's like, "The last time we won a playoff game, I hadn't even downloaded Fortnite yet."
Say no more.
Yes,
put in the history books.
Wow.
Yeah,
it'd been much before.
Who needs to read about U.S. history? You can read about Fortnite. And now this is what. And Andy, correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't we see this in the Lafayette districts?
Oh yeah,
for Purdue in the national title, they went 2 hour delay the next morning.
It was a 2 hour delay
in 49 states.
Yep.
It's just basketball.
You damn right.
But this is Indiana. JJ, I'm glad you guys have taken it a step further.
Yeah.
I dipped my toes in the water. You guys are in the deep end. And JJ's gone half day.
I was doing the lunch, and then you go back for an hour, and you BS, and you do some emails.
That's a great point. BS is the name of the game at that point.
Once you're out there on that lunch, you got to do that. Jeremiah Johnson with us.
John Stair, our place. Get it done, JJ.
Get it done. You know, I followed Rick Pitino at one point in my career, Jeremiah, and there was a whiteout, and he wore a white suit. And if I'm not mistaken, Friday night's going to be a bunch of gold shirts, right, on every seat. We need some sort of a gold suit from you, right? Don't we have to have something like that on Friday night?
That's a good question. There was one time I was asked to lead the All-Star campaign, and I got a black and gold sparkly suit that I did in those fake commercials. So I'll see if that is approved. Sometimes I got to be careful. I don't want to be too much of the story. I got to stay in my lane a little bit.
Understandable. You mentioned this a couple minutes ago, and we'll probably talk more about this tomorrow on the show. Handling prosperity, you know, that's something this team hasn't done too well this season. Now, they bounce back. Their superpower is they will bounce back, and we saw that last night. But now, and Carlisle mentioned it even after the game a couple times, now they have a couple days off. Now, handling that prosperity, do you think that's a storyline? And if so, how much going into game 3?
It is, just because of not just history with this team, but in competitive playoff series, you see a lot of, you know, back and forth. You see a team respond, not just in making adjustments, but, you know, you just have that little bit of sense of urgency, that sense of anger. And we don't even know about Giannis Antetokounmpo and his status. So that's a factor as well. It's easier said than done, because the mind is, you know, it plays its tricks on people. And anytime you have a matchup where you think, oh, yeah, that'll be easy, and we've seen that with the Pacers this season, if you just let up a little bit, sometimes it can come back to haunt you. But I think the main thing is to not rely on that home crowd as, you know, oh, you're coming home, you know, you got the big win. You have to play the same way. You almost just have to act like over the next 2 days you lost that game and you're down 0-2. And if you can trick your brain into thinking that, you'd be better off. But I do think because it's been so long, a lot of players, I heard on the bus last night, Miles telling guys, oh, just wait till, you know, you hear how loud it's going to be at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. And someone was like, oh, you mean like that Boston game? And he's like, yeah, that was loud, but, you know, this will be even louder. I mean, they're looking forward to it, and they feed off that energy. And you saw in the playoffs for 3 or 4 days, now there have been two road teams win a game. It's not easy to win on the road. So the challenge for those fans that are going to get out of work early, make it so where it's not easy for the Bucks to win a road game. If you can have that same energy and enthusiasm and you can feed off that crowd, make Doc Rivers use his challenge, make him use his timeouts, do everything, you can be in a good spot to really take control of the series.
Again, Jeremiah Johnson with us here, Bally Sports 5:30 coming up here on Friday, then 7 o'clock on Sunday for Game 4. Any vibes, any guesses as to when we see Giannis, if we see Giannis?
Yeah, I did think it was dependent upon how the series would go. I think you'll know a lot by tomorrow's practice. And my guess is both teams take today off and don't necessarily get a workout in. But what he's done in the gym, by all accounts, has been shooting and anything individual related. Does he practice with the team? Do they decide to reveal what he does? But if it gets out that he, you know, goes through full team sessions, to me that's an indicator he might be available on Friday or at the very least on Sunday. But if you don't hear that, maybe we'll have to monitor Shams and Woj for what they decide to put out there. 1-1 makes it very interesting, and you have to start to think about everything, and you don't want to fall down 2-0 if you're Milwaukee. But I don't think it can be as simple as, oh, he plays and everything's fine. That's the way the Bucks feel about it, their fans at least. They think, oh, well, as soon as Giannis comes back, the series is over. It's a different matchup right now than the regular season, but the Pacers won 4 or 5, and Giannis played all those games, and he played well. I'll be curious to see if and when he comes back the role that Damian Lillard has, because he was scary in this version, the Portland Trailblazers version of Damian Lillard. Will he be as involved? And if he's not, then maybe it's a wash.
E-Learning Friday, courtesy of future mayor of Zionsville, that is Jeremiah Johnson here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. JJ, can't wait. Great work. I enjoyed listening to you guys last night, the broadcast per usual, from you, Chris, and Quinn, and Eddie. Very, very good, and looking forward to Friday, 5:30. You guys will be right. Good 5:30, right, and Sunday, right? We know that Bally will at least have those games. We aren't sure, game 5 and 6, is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, 5 o'clock pregame, so I've got to adjust my prep and everything and what time I need to get downtown. So I'm planning to get downtown plenty early. And, yes, even the games that are not yet set, I don't know that there's an ABC window during the middle of the week. So not with 100% certainty, but I really think that we'll have all the games of this first-round series.
Get a nap in, JJ. Thank you.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
All good. Thanks, guys.
It's time for another Colts on the Clock.
The Colts are on the clock.
All right, yeah, we're doing it every day leading up to the draft tomorrow night. We've been through, boy, what a bunch of defensive backs, a bunch of wide receivers. We talked a week and a half ago about Brock Bowers. Today, you may write this one off, but I'm not so sure. It's Byron Murphy II. You may say, Andy, who the hell's that? Did you watch a lot of Texas football, even though they were one of the best teams in the country? He is their big defensive tackle, a little over 6 foot, about 300 pounds. This is a massive, massive guy. And he is seen overall as the best defensive tackle. And we even talked about this, KB. He is seen by some GMs as the best defensive player here early in this first round. That would be even over a guy that you have a man crush in, the edge there from Alabama in Dallas Turner.
Colts fans hate this the most?
Well, I think this is what's interesting is, you know, if Buckner didn't get his deal and if you didn't bring back Grover Stewart, I think Byron Murphy would be a guy that we would have spent a lot of time on. I mean, I really feel like he would have been one of those guys at the very top of the list. I'm not sure he's going to be there at 15. You know, what do you trust with the rhetoric? You know, would he go right after Dallas Turner? Could he go before Turner? To me, I'm very lukewarm on this because you have a lot of money in those interior defensive linemen. I cannot imagine throwing a third one in there, but it is Chris Ballard. It is the trenches. And Murphy, obviously, is a really good player. If I'm a Colts fan, I wouldn't mind seeing Murphy go before 15 to not even have to talk about it, to be quite honest.
I think you laid it out pretty darn well there. Great player. Tons of power, big pressure number, which you know you don't typically see from a lot of interior defensive linemen at the college level. But again, do you need it? The Colts have invested at defensive tackle, I'd say arguably as much as any team in the league. And even if you don't want to look at Grover Stewart and DeForest Buckner both signing multiple-year extensions, even look at some of the depth, like Dio Dangbo plays interior a lot. Tyquan Lewis plays inside a lot on pass rush downs. You drafted Adetamiwa Adebare out of Northwestern in round 4. I mean, that's where you drafted Grover Stewart. Just year 2 for him. Eric Johnson II, you drafted in round 5 just a couple years ago. So even your depth guys at least have some resume. So no.
You're a no.
Nothing against him as a player. I want to make that very clear.
Right.
There is an element of need that has to. I laugh at best player available or nothing. No. Best player available married with some need. That's how the draft has got to be viewed, and with life cycles in the NFL being so short. That is exactly what you got to do. So. No.
It's funny. He's one of those guys where it's like, Ballard, we know you like him. We know you want to take him. But big guy, you just don't need him this time. I'm trying to think of a good something good to equate that to in our own lives. You don't need more of this. You've already had enough of it. That's how I feel about Byron Murphy. But
second trip to the pizza box. Leave it for lunch tomorrow.
He's pretty good. I believe, and we'll do this tomorrow. Nate Wiggins, I think, is the only player we haven't talked about on our list. He's the corner from Clemson. So maybe we bring in Jake Query tomorrow and he can break down his game.
I'm sure
exactly. He knows about the measurables.
Sure, he'd love to wake up at that hour and talk about that.
Of Nate Wiggins. All right, let's talk some Pacers. JJ, Jeremiah Johnson, what did he see there in Milwaukee up close? And, I was going to ask him, how bad of a mood was Rick Carlisle and the team? How bad was it really from Sunday to last night? We'll do all of that next. It's a Wednesday. It's a wake-up call, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.